You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 11th of November, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to continue with what I was talking about yesterday before we get into the news today, referencing the leafleting, the Patriotic Alternative leaflet, which criticises the government policy of immigration. And I was pointing out yesterday that the leaflet itself is neutral. The leaflet itself cannot be seen to be inciting hate at all, or could not be seen as a malicious communication. Where the law comes in is in the intent of the person that was delivering it. And this is quite important, because people will look at that leaflet and they'll say, well, there's nothing wrong with the leaflet. But the law is about an intent to incite racial hatred. So what the police will be looking for when they find the lad that was posting these leaflets, they will be trying to find out what his intent was. And the way that they do that now, since the National Action arrests and since National Action were proscribed, they collect the devices of the person that they have arrested. They will collect the devices, they'll look at the books that they have, and they'll look in the chat rooms and they'll look at their social media accounts. And what they will be looking for is evidence of an intent to incite racial hatred. And rightly or wrongly, they will include things such as racial slurs. Now, I wasn't really aware of this until a couple of years ago. I always thought, well, whatever language you use to describe ethnic minorities, you just use whatever language the people around you use. And it doesn't mean you hate them if you use a humorous name to describe them. But apparently using humorous names to describe them can be used as evidence of incitement. Again, rightly or wrongly, I don't think that that's particularly right. I don't think that if you use humorous names for ethnic minorities, it means that you hate them. I mean, does it mean that you hate the French because you call them froggies? Does it mean that we hate the Australians because we call them, or because they call us, Poms? It doesn't really compute that means that you're trying to incite racial hatred. But there have been cases in the past where that has been the case. And because people have used terms that are now classed as offensive that weren't originally to describe these ethnic minorities, that's evidence of trying to incite hate. So that's something that people who are leafleting need to think about. And Patriotic Alternative will not have racial slurs in the chat room. That's banned in the chat room. And that's one of the reasons for it, because that can be used as evidence that your intent is to incite racial hatred. Another thing that can be used as evidence is if you show support for intimidation or violence directed at ethnic minorities. So if you are showing support for vandalism or showing support for a violent attack on ethnic minorities or showing support for inducing fear in them in some way, that could be used as well. So these are all things that people that are leafleting, activists, people that, or anybody really involved in nationalism, if you want to protect yourself so that your intentions will be seen as pure and just and all about preserving the white race and not about inciting hatred, then you need to make sure that you're not using racial slurs and you're not expressing support for intimidation of ethnic minorities or violence against them in chat rooms. And that is the best way to protect yourself. And I just wanted to bring that up because we get new people into the movement all the time and they may not be aware of that. That's not something that is highlighted all that often. And of course, people think, well, we'll just use a humorous name for the ethnic minorities. It's just to make people laugh. And there's no intent there to incite hatred. There is an intent to make people laugh, but that can be used in court. It has been used in court. Not always, but it has been used in court and it can be used against you. So just bear that in mind. Right, let's get into some of these news stories here today. The first one concerns Edward Colston, the great philanthropist whose statue was pulled down in Bristol during Black Lives Matter riots in the summer. A school named after Edward Colston has been renamed after the 17th century slave trader was toppled by Black Lives Matter protesters in June. And I'll just stop right there because this is something they keep doing now. Anybody that was involved in trading in the 17th century, they're now referring to them as slave trader, as if that was the man's identity. The man was a trader. He traded in all sorts of goods. He was a merchant. Slaves were just one of the items that were sold by him. But they want to reduce these men down to being is slave traders. They won't reduce the black African chiefs that actually sold the slaves. They won't reduce them down to slave sellers or slave catchers or enslavers or slave traders. They leave them alone entirely. But if a white man was involved in merchant shipping in the 17th century, they will reduce them now to just being a slave trader and think this man was a great philanthropist responsible for really making Bristol the city that it is today. It's disgraceful that they are insulting him like this and reducing him just to being a slave trader. But it gets worse. Colston Girls' School in Bristol, which, of course, is named after Edward Colston, will become Montpellier High School after a vote with current students and staff. Well, what does it have to do with the current students and staff, what the name of the school is called, if the school was started by this man that it's named after and he paid for it? It's got nothing to do with the current students and staff, what the name of the school is, if they're not paying for it. If the man that it is named after is paying for it, that's who it should be named after. The school was established in 1891, 169 years after the death of Colston, and was built with money he had endowed to support education. Think about that, 169 years after his death, and the money that he left behind to help the British people, to educate the British people, that was still being used to buy new schools with, 169 years after his death. I mean, this man was a great philanthropist, and generations of Bristolians have benefited from his good nature and his goodwill. And now they want to besmirch his name by insulting him by calling him just a slave trader and pretending that it's not his money that actually built all of this. I mean, what a slap in the face for the man's family, let alone all the generations that have gone before him that have benefited from his goodwill. The school's name and association with Colston had been the subject of renewed public debate after his statue was toppled during a BLM protest after the death of unarmed black man George Floyd in Minneapolis. Unarmed black man who died of a drug overdose, as we now know. Principal Kerry McCulloch told students at a virtual school assembly that they had navigated a complex and emotional issue with skill and maturity, and that they had shown respect for others throughout the process, acknowledging that there are many views and opinions that reach far beyond the city. They haven't shown any respect for Edward Colston. They haven't shown any respect for the man who has paid for the school and paid for their education. And if they're going to ask the students to vote on this and for them to decide on this, And of course, these students have been brainwashed with modern versions of history, haven't they? They've even taught Black Lives Matter in the schools. I mean, this is rather like delegating where the family car journey is going to go to the children in the back rather than to the navigators and driver that's sat in the front. She said the school is proud to be part of the Montpellier community and that the new name would allow the school to forge a new identity that represents its diverse and inclusive community. It's not the diverse and inclusive community that built the school, though, is it? Or that paid for it. The identity should represent the benefactor of that school. And what they've basically done is they've hijacked it. They've hijacked the name of the school and they're trying to pretend that this is somehow a positive and a good thing. The name is one of 10 that a working party of students developed earlier this year. The names were presented to the Venturers Trust Board, which runs the school, and shortlisted 3 for voting on, from a choice of Montpellier, Liberty and Concordia, and college, high school and school. 62% of votes favoured Montpellier High School. I guess Montpellier must just be the name of the area that they're from. Head student Betsy Maguire said, "It's been incredible to be part of this process and to work alongside others on such a monumental project." Monumental project? It's hijacking, isn't it? It's theft. It's the theft of a school from the philanthropist that built it. She says, "I'm certain that there are students in this school who will change the world. Be it through challenging opinions or championing ideals for the future, every single person here should feel proud of what they have achieved." Proud of besmirching this good man's name and stealing his school from him. A full rebrand of the Non-Selective Academy is expected to take place in 2021. Mrs. McCulloch added, "We are conscious of the cost implication for our community of a school-wide rebrand. Updating uniforms midway through a school year is not something we would ask parents to do. We will now begin to work with a designer to develop our new visual identity, and we would like to enjoy the experience rather than rush it. It will be a proud moment for us all when we begin our next academic year as Montpellier High School." And there's no reference there, of course, to the endowment that actually built the school and the money that will still be going to that school from Edward Colston. And this is typical of so many of these places that they're now trying to rename. They're happy to take the money from the philanthropist, and then they'll change the name of the school and just essentially steal it from them and leave no record of the good nature of the man that gifted them that money. "There has been pressure on the Society of Merchant Venturers for several years over the name of Colston's Girls' School. It was set up by the Society of Merchant Venturers in the 1890s as a girls' alternative to the private Colston School, which was set up by Colston himself in 1610. Think about that. This is 130 years ago, and the Society of Merchant Venturers, who we're told to see today as, oh, they're just all slave traders, and they were setting up a girls' alternative to the Colston School, which was obviously just for boys. You would think that today they would look at that and they'd say, oh, how wonderfully progressive and feminist of the Society of Merchant Venturers. But no, that's not good enough for them. They've got to change the name of the school entirely. The Society of Merchant Venturers and the Academy Trust they run, which runs the school, resisted attempts by staff to set up a consultation in 2017 over the name, but the toppling of Colston's statue triggered a new process. So at least they tried to stop this, and they really should have been able to stop this. It's really got nothing to do with the pupils of the school or the headmistress, what the actual school's name is, if it's named after the person that built it, whose money funded it. In a statement, Chair of Governors Chris Patterson said, "Inviting the students to shape and to deliver the consultation and to have the final say on what is the new name was certainly the right decision." Yes, because they came out with a decision that they had been instructed to. They'd been told what a horrible, wicked man this Edward Colston is, and he enslaved all these poor, innocent blacks in Africa, and so many of them died. What an absolute horror it was. None of these students will have been told about the number of whites that were enslaved. about the white farm workers that were just snatched off the streets and sent to America as indentured servants, or about the white children that were being shoved up chimneys at the time to sweep the chimneys, or the 5 and 6 year olds that were being thrown in amongst the mangles and the weaving machinery and in the textiles factories in the north there. They won't be told anything about that. They'll just be told all about the poor blacks that were enslaved. They won't even be told that it was other blacks that enslaved them, or that they actually made wealth out of this, these black African chiefs did. As we will see as we go on through this. The students have conducted themselves with integrity throughout the entire process, and they have been fantastic ambassadors for the school, displaying our core values of respect, responsibility, curiosity, and resilience. So basically what they've done is they've handed the responsibility for this over to children, because they knew that if this was left to the society of merchant venturers who have been going for centuries and are doing their best to manage the endowments and that these great philanthropists left, if they'd left it to them, then they wouldn't have changed it. They would have tried to keep the name. They would have had respect, a little bit of respect for the man that did this. They will remember this experience for the rest of their lives, and they have learnt valuable life skills that will help them in the future, she says. David Watson, CEO of Venturers Trust, said CGS became an integral part of the debate over how to contextualise the past so that we learn lessons to create a better future. Students have made history today by choosing a new name to reflect their diverse and inclusive school community. So what do they mean by contextualise? Well, what they mean by contextualise is to project today's sensibilities and values 300 years back into the past and claim that all the people in the past, all the white people, were evil because they were doing something that white people wouldn't dream of doing today. That's basically what they mean by contextualise. They mean project today's sensibilities onto the past. Now, the news article here also has some information about Edward Colston here. Edward Colston was born to a wealthy merchant family in Bristol, 1636. After working as an apprentice at a livery company, he began to explore the shipping industry and started up his own business. He later joined the Royal African Company and rose up the ranks to deputy governor. The company had complete control of Britain's slave trade, as well as its gold and ivory business, with Africa and the forts on the coast of West Africa. So essentially, the company had complete control over all the trade that the country was doing with Africa. It wasn't just slaves. What else did Africa have? What else did Africa have that it could actually trade with us? Gold, ivory, as it tells us here, and slaves. That is all that Africa had that it could trade with us. And obviously, the Africans wanted what we had to offer them. In exchange, they weren't giving up their gold, ivory, and slaves for free. They were being paid for this. And he was only the deputy governor for 2 years. The majority of his money did not come from him being the deputy governor here. As we learn, he started up his own business. And it was after that he joined the Royal African Company. The money that he made was from his own business that had nothing to do with slavery. During his tenure at the company, his ships transported around 80,000 slaves from Africa to the Caribbean and America. Around 20,000 of them, including around 3,000 or more children, died during the journeys. How shocking that sounds, doesn't it? Now, when I talked about this before, I can recall going on Wikipedia to look into this. And it turned out that actually there were more of the ship's crew that died on these trips than the cargo. And of course, if you are transporting a profitable cargo from Africa to America, you are not going to want them to die, are you? This is a precious cargo. The last thing you're going to want is your cargo to die. And in actual fact, the ship's crew, the white men, they were actually worth less than these slaves were. They were treated terribly, the crews were. They were flogged with a cat-o'-nine-tails. They were starved, really, really badly treated some of these crews were. And it does look like Wikipedia has removed the number of crew that actually died on these trips as well. But I did find another slavery article which does have some quotes about the way that the crew were treated. Many crew members often became ill on the West African coast. Being from Europe, the sailors were not used to the tropical diseases found in this part of the world, such as malaria. At the time of the transatlantic slave trade, no cure for malaria had yet been discovered. And remember, the Africans were used to malaria. They were used to yellow fever. They were used to dengue fever. The dengue fever. This is why these Africans were transported to America, because it was thought that they would be much more better suited for actually doing the work there, because it was so hot there and the white men were unable to do it. They would get malaria, they would get these diseases. That's the only reason why they were transporting these blacks there. They would have had white slaves doing it. If the white slaves had been able to handle the heat. In actual fact, I think it was the white slaves that prepared Jamaica and prepared the Caribbean before these black slaves went there to then work on the farms. The death rate amongst the crew on board the ships was very high. On the slave ship, the Jupiter, so it gives an example here, 7 men out of the 46 died. One man drowned, the other 6 died from the fever, probably malaria, or the flux, either gastroenteritis or dysentery, which spread quickly in the cramped conditions on board the ship. So that's roughly about 1/6, isn't it? A little bit under 1/6 of the crew died. And if we have 20,000, which I would say is probably a rather large estimate of the number of slaves that died from going from Africa to America, that's 1/5. So 1/5 of the slaves died, but 1/6 of the crew died as well. And nobody mentions that. Nobody mentions that. They just talk about, and the way they talk about it, it's as if these slave ship captains were just throwing their cargo over the side just for the fun of it. You know, the last thing they would have wanted was to have their cargo expire before they could get it to the market. Colston's brother Thomas supplied the glass beads that were used to buy the slaves. Again, this will get jumped on today, and they'll say, look, they conned these Africans into selling their stuff for glass beads. That's what the Africans wanted. They could have had anything they liked. They could have had tobacco, they could have had wine, they could have had textiles, they could have had machinery, they could have had weapons, they could have had anything they liked. They could have bought from the traders. But what they wanted, according to this, is glass beads. So they were given glass beads. And I'm sure they would have given them as many glass beads as they wanted. But this is the reason why Africa is not up to the same, built up to the same standards that the West is. Look what we did with the resources that we had, and those resources were built from trade, and there was nothing to stop the Africans from doing the same. These African chiefs had a limitless supply of slaves that they weren't paying for. They had a limitless supply of them. They could have made an absolute fortune out of these slave traders that needed these black Africans to do the work on their farms in America, because the white slaves couldn't do the job. I mean, they were really in a position to make a fortune here. And either they did make a fortune and they just squandered it, or they didn't. But you can hardly blame the white man for doing this, and certainly not blame him 300 years later or start attacking this Colston character just because he worked as a governor of this trading company after he had already made his fortune. Colston became the Conservative MP for Bristol in 1710, but stood only for one term due to old age and ill health. He used a lot of his wealth, and then they say here, accrued from his extensive slave trading, but it wasn't accrued from that. It was from his own business that he had already made his fortune before he was then taken on by the Africa company, by the trading company, because he had already made so much money. That's why they took him on. And he was only the governor for 2 years. He used a lot of his wealth to build schools and almshouses in his home city. So he wasn't spending this on himself. He was spending on it on improving the lives of the poor and the destitute of Bristol. And as we learned earlier, 150 years later, they were still building schools for the people of Bristol out of the money that he left. A statue was erected in his honour, as well as other buildings named after him, including Colston Hall. I mean, this is a great man. This is the benefactor of Bristol here. However, after years of protests by campaigners and boycotts by artists, the venue recently agreed to remove all reference to the trader. So again, this man built this building, named it after himself, so that people would remember him and thank him when they used this hall. And now they're going to steal it from him and rename it as something else. On a statue commemorating Colston in Bristol, a plaque read, "Erected by the citizens of Bristol as a memorial of one of the most virtuous and wise sons of their city." So it was actually the Bristolians themselves that wanted this statue to go up there because they knew that this man had been so good to them. And now it's been torn down, and we're being told that he was somehow a bad guy because he was involved in exactly the same trade that the people claiming he is a bad guy were involved in themselves. You can't say that the black Africans were not involved in the slave trade. They were involved in it just as much as the white slave traders were. They were the ones selling the black slaves. In the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020, sparked by the death of George Floyd in the US, the statue of Colston overlooking the harbour was torn down. And who can forget seeing that? Just a rampant mob of lawlessness tearing down this statue, throwing paint over it, and the Bristol police just stood there watching, doing nothing about it. And now this statue has been placed in a museum. And they'd actually had votes among the general public, votes among the Bristolians, to see if they wanted that statue to be pulled down or changed. And every time they had a vote, the Bristolians said, no, we want to leave that statue there. So what happened there is they thought, well, we'll just ignore democracy. We'll just have rule of the mob and we'll just tear the statue down and stick two fingers up at the Bristolians that said that they don't want the statue pulled down. And the mayor of Bristol, he supports this. He thinks it's great that this statue has been pulled down. He's hardly representing the majority of the Bristolians, is he? Got more monument news here. A monument to a hero of the Battle of Waterloo may be under threat of being removed from St. Paul's Cathedral due to its links to the slave trade. So this is a statue that's been put up because he defended Britain in a heroic way, and yet because he was involved in the slave trade, we've got to pull that down as well. I mean, this is the other thing. They say they want to contextualise these things, but the reason for putting that statue up of Colston is because he was a philanthropist. It's not because he was a slave trader. The reason why this monument here is in St. Paul's Cathedral is because he was a great hero at the Battle of Waterloo. It's not because he was a slave trader. And the idea that we should be projecting today's values back into the past and slandering all our heroes, it's like they're just stealing all our heroes from us. If they're not happy with replacing the important people in our past with black actors, then the rest of them, they're going to make out to be the devil incarnate and somehow responsible for enslaving blacks and the reason why they're in the place they are today in the world. The memorial in the cathedral is of Lieutenant General Sir Thomas Picton, the most senior officer to die at the Battle of Waterloo in 1815. After discovering his links to the slave trade and rule of the Caribbean island of Trinidad, the statue could be removed, following the introduction of a new project into the history of statues at St. Paul's. The project Pantheon's Sculpture at St. Paul's Cathedral is a three-year scheme with £800,000 of funding from the Arts and Humanities Research Council to explore the sculptures in St. Paul's from 1795 to 1914. Sculptures and statues that were put up long before we had any immigration into Britain, and they are wanting to pull them down. It states the project has been encouraged by the debates stimulated by the Black Lives Matter and Roads Must Fall movements. So they're just wanting to replace statues of white people. That's all there is to this. The statue is there because he was a hero at the Battle of Waterloo. But the people that are investigating this, they're more interested in the fact that he worked in Trinidad when the slave trade was going. I mean, the slave trade was really just the employment of the day. That was the way that employment worked. You didn't pay people wages that they could go out and spend in the shops and have to pay on a mortgage and pay on insurance on their car and all of that. What you did is you paid in kind. You paid for a roof over these people's heads. You paid for their healthcare. You paid for their clothing. You paid for their education. They didn't want for anything. They had all the things that we have today that we spend our money on when we get our wages. They had all of that back then. Not like they didn't have that. They even had a pension provided for them. When they were too old to work on the farms anymore, they still had everything paid for. They still had their healthcare paid for. They still had the childcare paid for if they had children. The way this is promoted today, it's as if these slaves were just starved and worked into the ground because they could then just be replaced with another one for free. And the slave traders were not getting these slaves for free. It was only the slave sellers in Africa that were getting the slaves for free. The slave traders had to pay for them. And Thomas Picton, he wasn't a slave trader, and yet they're still going to try and pull down his statue. On the UK Research and Innovation website, it states, "The sculptural pantheons have become the subject of significant media and popular interest over the last 5 years in Britain and its former colonies, and across the contemporary US, thanks to debates generated by Black Lives Matter, the Roads Must Fall, and All Monuments Must Fall movements." That's a very, very honest title for that movement, isn't it? All monuments must fall. And of course, what they mean there is all statues, monuments of white people. In the wake of the Brexit decision and the Trump presidency, of course, they link those two things together. "These far-reaching debates encourage us to think anew about the single most significant long C19 British sculptural pantheon at St. Paul's Cathedral, including more than 500 monuments by many of the most important artists working in this period. The pantheon depicts some of Regency, Victorian and Edwardian Britain's most significant people and addresses some of the UK and the former empire's most pressing questions, including the status and treatment of slaves, prisoners of war, and native peoples." Nothing at all there about the treatment of the indigenous British people and how they were being treated at the time. And as it says here, this was Britain's most significant people. These are heroes. These are great people from our past that they're now desperate to try and find any excuse they can find so that they can pull them down. And they admit that by calling the movement All Monuments Must Fall. And this isn't just these students doing this. This is a proper research that's being done into St. Paul's Cathedral. Despite dying at Waterloo, so this man gave his life for his country, Sir Thomas made his fortune in the slave trade. He was also responsible for a brutal regime during his time as governor to Trinidad and sanctioned the torture of a 14-year-old girl. Well, we would have to look into that, wouldn't we, and see what that was, see what happened there. Was torture the usual way of getting information out from people at that time? I would suggest it probably was. The fact that she was 14 years old, we had 10-year-old children running up chimneys, cleaning out chimneys. A 14-year-old black girl would have been seen as an adult, basically. She would have been seen as an adult. And if she was tortured to get some information out of her, then you only torture people because you think they have some information that you need. It's not something that we would do today, but it is something that was quite normal behaviour back then. Despite having the blessing of the Dean of St. Paul's, the very Reverend David Ison, it is unclear if any of the statues will be removed. Sir Thomas's statue in Cardiff was boarded up and taken from the civic centre following a vote to remove it during the summer. So they've already pulled down one statue of this man. They won't be happy until they've pulled down every representation there is in public of our history and replaced it with themselves. This is what conquerors do to the vanquished people throughout history. This is what they do. They can dress it up in recontextualizing or trying to right the wrongs of the past as much as they like, but essentially they're doing exactly the same thing as conquering peoples do to vanquished peoples. And it's our own people that are doing this to us at the instigation of these special interest groups. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.